The feline body wore off on him, and he was merely curious about me.
Apparently, he's missed you. A leading question.
Apparently, she hedged. Though he barely gave us anything to go on. Her gaze turned distant as she looked at the empty circle before them, then took her phone out of her pocket.
Hunt caught a glimpse of who she dialed. Declan Emmett.
Hi, Bee.
In the background, music thumped and male laughter roared. Bryce didn't bother with niceties.
We've been tipped off that we should run various tests again. I'm assuming that means the ones on the victims and crime scenes a few years ago. Can you think of anything that should be re-examined?
In the background, Rune asked, Is that Bryce? But Declan said,
I'd definitely run a scent diagnostic. You'll need clothes.
Bryce said, They must have done a scent diagnostic 2 years ago.
Declan said, Was it the common one or the Mimir?
Hunt's stomach tightened, especially as Bryce said, What's the difference?
The Mimir is better. It's relatively new.
Bryce looked at Hunt, and he shook his head slowly. She said quietly into the phone, No one did a Mimir test.
Declan hesitated.
Well, it's Fey-Tech, mostly. We loan it out to the Legion for their major cases.
A pause.
Someone should have said something.
Hunt braced himself. Bryce asked, You had access to this sort of thing 2 years ago?
Declan paused again.
Shit.
Then Rune came on the line.
Bryce, a direct order was given not to pursue it through those channels. It was deemed a matter that the Fae should stay out of.
Devastation, rage, grief, all exploded across her face. Her fingers curled at her sides.
Hunt said, knowing Rune could hear it.
The Autumn King is a real prick. You know that.
Bryce snarled. I'm going to tell him just that.
She hung up. Hunt demanded,
What?
But she was already running out of the apartment.
Chapter 52.
Bryce's blood roared as she sprinted through the old square, down rain-soaked streets, all the way to Five Roses. The villas glowed in the rain, palatial homes with immaculate lawns and gardens, all fenced with wrought iron. Stone-faced fey or shifter sentries from the auxiliary were posted at every corner. As if the residents here lived in abject terror that the Peregrini and few slaves of Crescent City were poised to loot at any moment. She hurtled past the marble behemoth that was the Fey Archives, the building covered in drooping veils of flowers that ran down its many columns. Roses, jasmine, wisteria, all in perpetual bloom, no matter the season. She sprinted all the way to the sprawling white villa covered in pink roses and to the wrought iron gate around it guarded by four Fey warriors. They stepped into her path as she skidded to a halt, the flagstone street slick with rain.
Let me in, she said through her teeth, panting.
They didn't so much as blink.
Do you have an appointment with His Majesty?
One asked.
Let me in, she said again. He'd known. Her father had known there were tests to assess what had killed Danica, and had done nothing, had deliberately stayed out of it. She had to see him, had to hear it from him. She didn't care what time it was. The polished black door was shut, but the lights were on. He was home. He had to be.
Not without an appointment, said the same guard. Bryce took a step toward them and rebounded, hard. A wall of heat surrounded the compound, no doubt generated by the Fey males before her. One of the guards snickered. Her face grew hot, her eyes stinging.
Go tell your king that Bryce Quinlan needs a word now.
Come back when you have an appointment, half-breed,
one of the sentries said. Bryce smacked her hand against their shield. It didn't so much as ripple.
Tell him
The guard stiffened as power, dark and mighty, pulsed from behind her. Lightning skittered over the cobblestones. The guard's hands drifted to their swords. Hunt said, voice like thunder,
"The lady wants an audience with His Majesty."
"His Majesty is unavailable."
The guard who spoke had clearly noted the halo at Hunt's brow. The sneer that spread across his face was one of the most hideous things Bryce had ever seen.
"Especially for fallen scum and half-human skanks."
Hunt took a step toward them.
"Say that again."
The guard's sneer remained.
"Once wasn't enough."
Hunt's hand fisted at his side. He'd do it, she realized. He'd pummel these assholes into dust for her, fight his way inside the gate so she could have a chat with the king. Down the block, Rune appeared, wreathed in shadow, his black hair plastered to his head. Flynn and Declan followed close behind him.
"Stand down," Rune ordered the guards. "Stand the fuck down."
They did no such thing.
"Even you, Prince, are not authorized to order that."
Rune's shadow swirled at his shoulders like a phantom pair of wings, but he said to Bryce,
"There are other battles worth fighting with him. This isn't one of them."
Bryce stalked a few feet from the gate, even though the guards could likely hear every word. He deliberately chose not to help with what happened to Danica. Hunt said,
"Some might consider that to be interference with an imperial investigation."
"Fuck off, Athalar,"
Rune growled. He reached for Bryce's arm, but she stepped back. He clenched his jaw.
"You are considered a member of this court, you know. You were involved in a colossal mess. He decided the best thing for your safety was to let the case drop, not dig further."
"As if he's ever given two shits about my safety."
"He gave enough of a shit about you to want me to be your living guard. But you wanted Athalar to play sexy roomie."
"He wants to find the horn for himself," she snapped. "It has nothing to do with me." She pointed to the house beyond the iron fence. "You go in there and tell that piece of shit that I won't forget this. Ever. I doubt he'll care, but you tell him."
Rune's shadows stilled, draping from his shoulders. "I'm sorry, Bryce, about Danica."
"Do not," she seethed, "ever say her name to me. Never say her name to me again."
She could have sworn that hurt even his shadows couldn't hide flashed across her brother's face. But she turned, finding Hunt watching with crossed arms.
"I'll see you at the apartment," she said to him,
and didn't bother to say more before launching back into a run.
It had been fucked up to not warn Hunt whom she was summoning, she'd admit it, but not as fucked up as the fey tests her father had declined to provide access to. Bryce didn't go home. Halfway there, she decided she'd head somewhere else. The White Raven was shut down, but her old favorite whiskey bar would do just fine. Lethe was open and serving, which was good, because her leg throbbed mercilessly and her feet were blistered from running in her stupid flats. She took them off the moment she hopped onto the leather stool at the bar, and sighed as her bare feet touched the cool brass footrest running the length of the dark wood counter. Lethe hadn't changed in the 2 years since she'd last set foot on the floor that lent itself to an optical illusion, painted with black, gray, and white cubes. The cherry wood pillars still rose like trees to form the carved arched ceiling high above, looming over a bar made from fogged glass and black metal, all clean lines and square edges. She'd messaged Juniper 5 minutes ago, inviting her for a drink. She still hadn't heard back. So she'd watched the news on the screen above the bar, flashing to the muddy battlefields in Pangera, the husks of mech suits littering them like broken toys, bodies both human and veneer sprawled for miles, the crows already feasting. Even the human busboy had stopped to look, his face tight as he beheld the carnage. A barked order from the bartender had kept him moving, but Bryce had seen the gleam in the young man's brown eyes, the fury and determination. "What the hell?" she muttered, and knocked back a mouthful of the whiskey in front of her. It tasted as acrid and vile as she remembered, burned all the way down, precisely what she wanted. Bryce took another swig. A bottle of some sort of purple tonic plunked onto the counter beside her tumbler. "For your leg," Hunt said, sliding onto the stool beside hers. "Drink up." She eyed the glass vial.
"You went to a medwitch?"
"There's a clinic around the corner. I figured you weren't leaving here anytime soon." Bryce sipped her whiskey.
"You guessed right."
He nudged the tonic closer. "Have it before you finish the rest."
"No comment about breaking my no drinking rule?"
He leaned on the bar, tucking in his wings. "It's your rule. You can end it whenever you like."
"Whatever."
She reached for the tonic, uncorking and knocking it back. She grimaced.
"Tastes like grape soda."
I told her to make it sweet. She batted her eyelashes.
"Because I'm so sweet, Athalar?"
"Because I knew you wouldn't drink it if it tasted like rubbing alcohol." She lifted her whiskey.
"I beg to differ."
Hunt signaled the bartender, ordered a water, and said to Bryce, "So, tonight went well." She chuckled, sipping the whiskey again.
Gods, it tasted awful. Why had she ever guzzled this stuff down?
"Superb." Hunt drank from his water, watched her for a long moment before he said, "Look, I'll sit here while you get stupid drunk if that's what you want. But I'll just say this first. There are better ways to deal with everything."
"Thanks, Mom."
"I mean it." The bartender set another whiskey before her, but Bryce didn't drink. Hunt said carefully, "You're not the only person to have lost someone you love." She propped her head on a hand.
"Tell me all about her, Hunt. Let's hear the full unabridged sob story at last."
He held her gaze. "Don't be an asshole. I'm trying to talk to you."
"And I'm trying to drink," she said, lifting her glass to do so.
Her phone buzzed, and both of them glanced at it. Juniper had finally written back.
"Can't, sorry, practice."
Then another buzz from Juniper.
"Wait, why are you drinking at Lethe? Are you drinking again? What happened?"
Hunt said quietly,
"Maybe your friend is trying to tell you something, too."
Bryce's fingers curled into fists, but she set her phone face down on the glowing, fogged glass.
"Weren't you going to tell me your heartbreaking story about your amazing girlfriend? What would she think about the way you manhandled me and practically devoured my neck the other night?"
She regretted the words the moment they were out. For so many reasons she regretted them, the least of which being that she hadn't been able to stop thinking about that moment of insanity on the roof, when his mouth had been on her neck and she'd started to completely unravel. How good it had felt. He had felt. Hunt stared her down for a long moment. Heat rose to her face. But all he said was,
"I'll see you at home."
The word echoed between them as he set another purple tonic on the counter.
"Drink that one in 30 minutes.
Then he was gone, prowling through the empty bar and onto the street beyond. Hunt had just settled onto the couch to watch the sunball game when Bryce walked into the apartment, two bags of groceries in her hands. About fucking time. Syrinx flung himself off the couch and bounded to her, rising onto his back legs to demand kisses. She obliged him, ruffling his golden fur before looking up at where Hunt sat on the couch. He just sipped from his beer and gave her a terse nod. She nodded back, not quite meeting his eyes, and strode for the kitchen. The limp was better, but not wholly gone. He'd sent Naomi to monitor the street outside that fancy whiskey bar while he hit the gym to work off his temper.
Manhandled. The word had lingered, along with the truth. He hadn't thought about Shahar for a second while they'd been on the roof, or in the days following. And when he'd had his hand wrapped around his cock in the shower that night, and every night since, it hadn't been the Archangel he'd thought of. Not even close. Quinlan had to know that. She had to know what wound she'd hit. So the options had been to yell at her or to exercise. He'd picked the latter. That had been 2 hours ago. He'd cleaned up all the obsidian salt, walked and fed Syrinx, and then sat on the couch to wait. Bryce set her bags onto the counter, Syrinx lingering at her feet to inspect every purchase. In between plays, Hunt stole glances at what she unpacked. Vegetables, fruits, meat, oat milk, cow's milk, rice, a loaf of brown bread. "Are we having company?" he asked. She yanked out a skillet and plunked it on the burner. "I figured I'd make a late dinner." Her back was stiff. Her shoulders straight. He might have thought she was pissed, but the fact that she was making dinner for them suggested otherwise. "Is it wise to cook when you've been pounding whiskey?" She shot him a glare over a shoulder. "I'm trying to do something nice, and you're not making it easy." Hunt held up his hands. "All right, sorry." She went back to the stove, adjusted the heat, and opened a package of some sort of ground meat. "I wasn't pounding whiskey," she said. "I left Lethe soon after you did."
"Where'd you go?"
"Out to a storage unit near Moonwood." She began gathering spices. "I stashed a lot of Danica's stuff there. Sabine was going to chuck it, but I took it before she did." She dumped some ground meat in the skillet and gestured to a third bag she'd left by the door. "I just wanted to make sure there was no hint of the horn there. Anything I might not have noticed at the time. And to grab some of Danica's clothes. Ones that were in my bedroom that night that evidence didn't take. I know they already have clothes from before, but I thought, maybe there's something on these, too." Hunt opened his mouth to say something. What exactly, he didn't know, but Bryce went on. "After that, I went to the market, since condiments aren't food, apparently." Hunt brought his beer with him as he padded to the kitchen.
"Want help?"
"No, this is an apology meal. Go watch your game."
"You don't need to apologize."
"I acted like an asshole. Let me cook something for you to make up for it."
"Based on how much chili powder you just dumped into that pan, I'm not sure I want to accept this particular apology."
"Fuck, I forgot to add the cumin!" She whirled toward the skillet, turning down the heat and adding the spice, stirring it into what smelled like ground turkey. She sighed. "I'm a mess." He waited, letting her gather her words. She began cutting an onion, her motions easy and smooth. "Honestly, I was a bit of a mess before what happened to Danica, and..." She sliced the onion into neat rings. "It didn't get any better."
"Why were you a mess before she died?"
Bryce slid the onion into the skillet. "I'm a half-human with a near-useless college degree. All my friends were going somewhere, doing something with themselves." Her mouth quirked to the side. "I'm a glorified secretary, with no long-term plan for anything." She stirred the onion around. "The partying and stuff? It was the only time when the four of us were on equal footing. When it didn't matter that Fury's some kind of merc or Juniper's so amazingly talented, or Danica would one day be this all-powerful wolf."
"They ever hold that against you?"
"No." Her amber eyes scanned his face. "No, they would never have done that. But I could never forget it."
"Your cousin said you used to dance. That you stopped after Danica died. You never wanted to follow that road?"
She pointed to the sweep of her hips. "I was told my half-human body was too clunky. I was also told that my boobs were too big and my ass could be used as an aerial port landing pad."
Your ass is perfect.
The words slipped out. He refrained from commenting on just how much he liked the other parts of her, too. How much he wanted to worship them, starting with that ass of hers.
Color bloomed on her cheeks.
Well, thank you.
She stirred the contents of the skillet.
But you don't dance for fun anymore?
No.
Her eyes went cold at that.
I don't.
And you never thought of doing anything else?
Of course I have. I've got 10 job applications hidden on my work computer. But I can't focus enough to finish them. It's been so long since I saw the job postings that they're probably filled by now anyway. It doesn't even matter that I'd also have to find some way to convince Jessica that I'll keep paying off my debt to her.
She kept stirring.
A human lifespan seems like a long time to fill, but an immortal one?
She hooked her hair behind an ear.
I have no idea what to do.
I'm 233 years old and I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah, but you did something. You fought for something. You are someone.
He tapped the slave tattoo on his wrist.
And look where I wound up.
She turned from the stove.
Hunt, I really am sorry for what I said about Shahar.
Don't worry about it.
Bryce jerked her chin toward Hunt's open bedroom door, the photo of her and Danica just barely visible on the dresser.
My mom took that the day we got out of the hospital in Rosk.
He knew she was building to something and was willing to play along.
Why were you in the hospital?
Danica's senior thesis was on the history of the illegal animal trade.
She uncovered a real smuggling ring, but no one in the Ox or the 33rd would help her. So she and I went to deal with it ourselves.
Bryce snorted. The operation was run by 5 asp shifters who caught us trying to free their stock.
We called them asp holes and things went downhill from there.
Of course they did. How downhill?
A motorcycle chase and crash, my right arm broken in 3 places, Danica's pelvis fractured. Danica got shot twice in the leg.
Gods.
You should have seen the asp holes.
You killed them.
Her eyes darkened. Nothing but pure fey predator shining there.
Some. The ones who shot Danica. I took care of them. The police got the rest.
Burning solace.
He had a feeling there was far more to the story.
I know people think Danica was a reckless partier with mommy issues. I know Sabine thinks that, but
Danica went to free those animals because she literally couldn't sleep at night knowing they were in cages, terrified and alone.
The party princess, Hunt and the Triari had mocked her behind her back.
Bryce went on.
Danica was always doing that kind of thing, helping people Sabine thought were beneath them.
Some part of her might have done it to piss off her mom, yeah.
But most of it was because she wanted to help. That's why she went easy on Philip Briggs and his group, why she gave him so many chances.
She let out a long breath.
She was difficult, but she was good.
And what about you?
He asked carefully. She ran a hand through her hair.
Most days, I feel cold as it was in here with Adis. Most days, all I want is to go back to how it was before. I can't bear to keep going forward.
Hunt gazed at her for a long moment.
There were some of the fallen who accepted the halo and slave tattoo, you know. After a few decades, they accepted it, stopped fighting it.
Why have you never stopped?
Because we were right then, and we're still right now. Shahar was the only spear point. I followed her blindly into a battle we could have never won, but I believed in what she stood for.
If you could do it over, march under Shahar's banner again, would you?
Hunt considered that. He didn't normally let himself dwell too long on what had happened, what had occurred since then.
If I hadn't rebelled with her, I'd probably have been noticed by another archangel for my lightning. I'd likely now be serving as a commander in one of Pangera's cities, hoping to one day earn enough to buy my way out of service. But they'd never let someone with my gifts go, and I had little choice but to join a legion. It was the path I was pushed onto, and the lightning, the killing. I never asked to be good at it. I'd give it up in a heartbeat if I could. Her eyes flickered with understanding.
I know. He lifted a brow.
She clarified. The being good at something you don't want to be good at. The talent you'd let go of in a heartbeat. He angled his head.
I mean, look at me. I'm amazing at attracting assholes.
Hunt huffed a laugh. She said,
you didn't answer my question. Would you still rebel if you knew what would happen?
Hunt sighed. That's what I was starting to say. Even if I hadn't rebelled, I'd wind up in a sugar-coated version of my life now, because I'm still a legionary being used for my so-called gifts, just now officially a slave, rather than being forced into service by a lack of other options. The only other difference is that I'm serving in Valbara, in a fool's bargain with an archangel, hoping to one day be forgiven for my supposed sins.
You don't think they were sins?
No. I think the angel hierarchies are bullshit. We were right to rebel.
Even though it cost you everything?
Yeah. So, I guess that's my answer. I'd still do it, even knowing what would happen. And if I ever get free...
Bryce halted her stirring, met his stare unblinkingly as Hunt said,
I remember every one of them who was there on the battlefield, who brought down Shahar. And all the angels, the Asteri, the Senate, the governors, all of them, who were there at our sentencing.
He leaned against the counter behind them and swigged from his beer, letting her fill in the rest. And after you've killed them all? What then?
He blinked at the lack of fear, of judgment. Assuming I live through it, you mean?
Assuming you live through taking on the archangels and Asteri, what then?
I don't know. He gave her a half smile. Maybe you and I can figure it out, Quinlan. We'll have centuries to do it.
If I make the drop.
He started. You would choose not to?
It was rare. So rare for a Vanir to refuse to make the drop and live only a mortal lifespan. She added more vegetables and seasoning to the pan before throwing a packet of instant rice into the microwave.
I don't know. I'd need an anchor. What about Rune?
Her cousin, even if neither of them would admit it, would take on every beast in the pit itself to protect her. She threw him a look dripping with disdain.
No fucking way.
Juniper, then. Someone she truly trusted, loved. She'd do it, but it doesn't feel right. And using one of the public anchors isn't for me.
I used one. It was fine.
He spied the questions brimming in her eyes and cut her off before she could voice them.
Maybe you'll change your mind.
Maybe. She chewed on her lip. I'm sorry you lost your friends.
I'm sorry you lost yours.
Bryce nodded her thanks, going back to stirring. I know people don't get it. It's just... A light went out inside me when it happened. Danica wasn't my sister or my lover. But she was the one person I could be myself around and never feel judged. The one person that I knew would always pick up the phone or call me back. She was the one person who made me feel brave, because no matter what happened, no matter how bad or embarrassing or shitty I was, I knew that I had her in my corner. That if it all went to hell, I could talk to her, and it would be fine.
Her eyes gleamed, and it was all he could do to not cross the few feet between them and grab her hand as she continued.
But it's not fine. I will never talk to her again. I think people expect me to be over it by now, but I can't. Anytime I get anywhere close to the truth of my new reality,
I want to space out again. To not have to be me. I can't fucking dance anymore because it reminds me of her. Of all the dancing we did together in clubs, or on the streets, or in our apartment or dorm. I won't let myself dance anymore because it brought me joy and... I don't want to feel those things. She swallowed. I know it sounds pathetic.
It's not,
he said quietly. I'm sorry I dumped my baggage in your lap.
A corner of his mouth turned up. You can dump your baggage in my lap any time, Quinlan.
She snorted, shaking her head. You made it sound gross.
You said it first.
Her mouth twitched. Damn if the smile didn't make his chest tighten. But Hunt just said,
I know you'll keep going forward, Quinlan. Even if it sucks.
What makes you so sure of it?
His feet were silent as he crossed the kitchen. She tipped back her head to hold his stare.
Because you pretend to be irreverent and lazy, but deep down you don't give up. Because you know that if you do, then they win. All the assholes, as you called them, win. So living and living well, it's the greatest fuck you that you can ever give them.
That's why you're still fighting.
He ran a hand over the tattoo on his brow.
Yes.
She let out a, stirring the mixture in the pan again.
Well then, Athalar, I guess it'll be you and me in the trenches for a while longer.
He smiled at her, more openly than he'd dared do with anyone in a long while.
You know, he said, I think I like the sound of that.
Her eyes warmed further, a blush stealing across her freckled cheeks.
You said home earlier, at the bar.
He had. He tried not to think about it. She went on.
I know you're supposed to live in the barracks or whatever Micah insists on, but if we somehow solve this case, that room is yours if you want it.
The offer rippled through him, and he couldn't think of a single word beyond,
thanks.
It was all that was necessary, he realized. The rice finished cooking, and she divvied it into two bowls before dumping the meat mixture on top of it. She extended one to him.
Nothing gourmet, but here. I'm sorry for earlier.
Hunt studied the steaming heap of meat and rice. He'd seen dogs served fancier meals, but he smiled slightly, his chest inexplicably tightening again.
Apology accepted, Quinlan.
A cat was sitting on her dresser. Exhaustion weighed her eyelids so heavily she could barely raise them. Eyes like the sky before dawn pinned her to the spot.
What blinds an oracle, Bryce Quinlan?
Her mouth formed a word, but sleep tugged her back into its embrace. The cat's blue eyes simmered.
What blinds an oracle?
She fought to keep her eyes open at the question, the urgency.
You know, she tried to say. The Autumn King's only daughter, thrown out like rubbish.
The cat had either guessed it at the temple all those years ago, or followed her home to confirm whose villa she had tried to enter.
He'll kill me if he knows.
The cat licked a paw.
Then make the drop.
She tried to speak again. Sleep held her firm, but she finally managed.
And what then?
The cat's whiskers twitched.
I told you. Come find me.
Her eyelids drooped, a final descent toward sleep.
Why?
The cat angled its head.
So we can finish this.
Chapter 53. It was still raining the next morning, which Bryce decided was an omen. Today would suck. Last night had sucked. Syrinx refused to emerge from under the sheets, even though Bryce tried to coax him with the promise of breakfast before his walk. And by the time Bryce finally hauled him to the street below, Hunt monitoring from the windows, the rain had gone from a pleasant patter to an outright deluge. A fat hop toad squatted in the corner of the building doorway, under the slight overhang, waiting for any small, unfortunate veneer to fly past. He eyed Bryce and Syrinx as they splashed by, earning a whiskery huff from the latter, and sidled closer to the side of the building. "Creep," she murmured above the drumming rain on the hood of her coat, feeling the hop toad watch them down the block. For a creature no bigger than her fist, they found ways to be menaces, namely to all manner of sprites. Even confined to the library, Lahaba loathed and dreaded them. Despite her navy raincoat, her black leggings and white t-shirt were soon soaked, as if the rain somehow went up from the ground. It pooled in her green rain boots, too, squelching with every step she made through the lasting rain, the palms swaying and hissing overhead. The rainiest spring on record, the news had proclaimed last night. She didn't doubt it. The hop toad was still there when they returned, Syrinx having completed his morning routine in record time, and Bryce might or might not have gone out of her way to stomp in a nearby puddle. The hop toad had stuck out his tongue at her, but flopped away. Hunt was standing at the stove, cooking something that smelled like bacon. He glanced over his shoulder while she removed her raincoat, dripping all over the floor. "You hungry?"
"I'm good."
His eyes narrowed.
"You should eat something before we go."
She waved him off, scooping food into Syrinx's bowl. When she stood, she found Hunt extending a plate toward her, bacon and eggs and thick brown toast.
"I watched you pick at your food for 5 days this past week," he said roughly. "We're not starting down that road again."
She rolled her eyes. "I don't need a male telling me when to eat."
"How about a friend telling you that you had an understandably rough night, and you get mean as shit when you're hungry?"
Bryce scowled. Hunt just kept holding out the plate.
"It's all right to be nervous, you know," he said.
He nodded toward the paper bag she'd left by the door, Danica's clothes folded and ready for analysis. She'd overheard Hunt calling Victoria 30 minutes ago, asking her to get the Mimir tech from the Fae. She'd said Declan already sent it. Bryce said,
"I'm not nervous. They're just clothes."
He only stared at her. Bryce growled,
"I'm not. Let them lose the clothes in evidence or whatever."
"Then eat."
"I don't like eggs."
His mouth twitched upward.
"I've seen you eat about 3 dozen of them."
Their gazes met and held.
"Who taught you to cook anyway?"
He sure as hell was a better cook than she was. The pitiful dinner she'd made him last night was proof.
"I taught myself. It's a useful skill for a soldier. Makes you a popular person in any Legion camp. Besides, I've got 2 centuries under my belt. It'd be pathetic not to know how to cook at this point."
He held the plate closer.
"Eat up, Quinlan. I won't let anyone lose those clothes."
She debated throwing the plate in his face, but finally took it and plunked into the seat at the head of the dining table. Syrinx trotted over to her, already gazing expectantly at the bacon. A cup of coffee appeared on the table a heartbeat later, the cream still swirling inside. Hunt smirked at her.
"Wouldn't want you to head out to the world without the proper provisions."
Bryce flipped him off, took his phone from where he'd left it on the table, and snapped a few pictures. The breakfast, the coffee, his stupid smirking face, Syrinx sitting beside her, and her own scowl. But she drank the coffee anyway. By the time she put her mug into the sink, Hunt finishing up his meal at the table behind her, she found her steps feeling lighter than they had in a while.
"Don't lose those,"
Hunt warned Victoria as she sifted through the bag on her desk. The Wraith looked up from the faded gray band t-shirt with a wailing robed figure on the front. The Banshees.
"We've got clothes and evidence for Danica Fendir,"
and the other victims.
Fine, but use these, too,
Hunt said, just in case someone had tampered with the evidence here, and to let Quinlan feel as if she'd helped with this. Bryce was at the gallery dealing with some snooty customer, with Naomi watching.
You got the Mimir tech from Declan?
As I said on the phone, yes.
Vic peered into the bag again.
I'll give you a call if anything comes up.
Hunt stretched a piece of paper across the desk. See if traces of any of these come up, too. Victoria took one look at the words on it and went pale, her halo stark over her brow.
You think it's one of these demons?
I hope not. He'd made a list of potential demons that might be working in conjunction with the Crystallos, all ancient and terrible, his dread deepening with each new name he added. Many of them were nightmares that prowled bedtime stories. All of them were catastrophic if they entered Midgard. He'd faced two of them before, and barely made it through the encounters. Hunt nodded toward the bag again.
I mean it. Don't lose those clothes, he said again.
Going soft, Athalar.
Hunt rolled his eyes and aimed for the doorway. I just like my balls where they are. Victoria notified Hunt that evening that she was still running the diagnostic. The phase Mimir tech was thorough enough that it'd take a good while to run. He prayed the results wouldn't be as devastating as he expected. He'd messaged Bryce about it while she finished up work, chuckling when he saw that she'd again changed her contact information in his phone. Bryce is a queen. They stayed up until midnight binge-watching a reality show about a bunch of hot young Vanir working at a beach club in the Coronal Islands. He'd refused at first, but by the end of the first hour, he'd been the one pressing play on the next episode, then the next. It hadn't hurt that they'd gone from sitting on opposite ends of the sectional to being side by side, his thigh pressed against hers. He might have toyed with her braid. She might have let him. The next morning, Hunt was just following Bryce toward the apartment elevator when his phone rang. He took one look at the number and grimaced before picking up.
Hi, Micah. My office. 15 minutes.
Bryce pressed the elevator button, but Hunt pointed to the roof door. He'd fly her to the gallery, then head to the CBD.
All right, he said carefully.
Do you want Miss Quinlan to join us?
Just you.
The line went dead. Chapter 54. Hunt took a back entrance into the tower, careful to avoid any area that Sandriel might be frequenting. Isaiah hadn't picked up, and he knew better than to keep calling until he did. Micah was staring out the window when he arrived, his power already brewing a storm in the room.
Why?
The Archangel asked. Are you running fey tests on old evidence down at the lab?
We have good reason to think the demon we identified isn't the one behind Danica Fendir's death. If we can find whatever actually did kill her, it might lead us to whoever summoned it. The summit is in 2 weeks.
I know. We're working as hard as we can.
Are you? Drinking at a whiskey bar with Bryce Quinlan counts as working? Asshole.
We're on it. Don't worry.
Sabine Fendir called my office, you know, to rip my head off about being a suspect.
There was nothing humane behind those eyes, only cold predator.
It was a mistake, and we'll own up to that, but we had sufficient cause to believe...
Get the job done.
Hunt gritted out.
We will.
Micah surveyed him coolly. Then he said,
Sandriel has been asking about you. About Miss Quinlan, too. She's made me a few generous offers to trade again.
Hunt's stomach became leaden.
I've turned her down so far. I told her that you're too valuable to me.
Micah threw a file on the table, then turned back to the window.
Don't make me reconsider, Hunt.
Hunt read through the file, the silent order it conveyed. His punishment. For Sabine, for taking too long, for just existing. A death for a death. He stopped at the barracks to pick up his helmet. Micah had written a note in the margin of the list of targets, their crimes. No guns. So Hunt grabbed a few more of his black-hilted daggers and his long-handled knife, too. Every movement was careful, deliberate. Every shift of his body as he donned his black battle suit quieted his mind, pulling him farther and farther from himself. His phone buzzed on his desk, and he glanced at it only long enough to see that Bryce is a queen had written to him.
Everything okay?
Hunt slid on his black gloves. His phone buzzed again.
I'm going to order in dumpling soup for lunch. Want some?
Hunt turned the phone over, blocking the screen from view, as if it'd somehow stop her from learning what he was doing. He gathered his weapons with centuries of efficiency, and then donned the helmet. The world descended into cool calculations, its colors dimmed. Only then did he pick up his phone and write back to Bryce.
I'm good. I'll see you later.
She'd written back by the time he reached the barracks landing pad. He'd watched the typing bubble pop up, vanish, then pop up again. Like she'd written out 10 different replies before settling on,
okay.
Hunt shut off his phone as he shouldered his way through the doors and into the open air. He was a stain against the brightness, a shadow standing against the sun. A flap of his wings had him skyborne, and he did not look back. Something was wrong. Bryce had known it the moment she realized she hadn't heard from him after an hour in the Comitium. The feeling had only worsened at his vague response to her message. No mention of why he'd been called in, what he was up to. As if someone else had written it for him. She'd typed out a dozen different replies to that non-Hunt message.
Please tell me everything is okay. Type 1 if you need help. Did I do something to upset you? What's wrong? Do you need me to come to the Comitium?
Turning down an offer of dumpling soup, did someone steal this phone? On and on, writing and deleting, until she'd written,
I'm worried. Please call me.
But she had no right to be worried, to demand those things of him. So she'd settled with a pathetic,
okay,
and had not heard back from him. She'd checked her phone obsessively the whole workday. Nothing. Worry was a writhing knot in her stomach. She didn't even order the soup. A glance at the roof cameras showed Naomi sitting there all day, her face tight. Bryce had gone up there around 3.
Do you have any idea where he might have gone?
She asked, her arms wrapped tightly around herself. Naomi looked her over.
Hunt is fine, she said.
She stopped herself, reading something on Bryce's face. Surprise flickered in her eyes.
He's fine,
the angel said gently. By the time Bryce got home, with Naomi stationed on the adjacent rooftop, she had stopped believing her. So she'd decided to hell with it, to hell with caution or looking cool or any of it. Standing in her kitchen as the clock crept toward 8, she wrote to Hunt,
Please call me. I'm worried about you.
There. Let it shoot into the ether or wherever the messages floated. She walked Syrinx one final time for the night, her phone clutched in her hand. As if the harder she gripped it, the more likely he'd be to respond. It was 11 by the time she broke and dialed a familiar number. Rune picked up on the first ring.
What's wrong?
How he knew, she didn't care. She swallowed.
Bryce.
Rune's voice sharpened. Music was playing in the background,
but it began to shift, as if he were moving to a quieter part of wherever he was. Have you seen Hunt anywhere today? Her voice sounded thin and high. In the background, Flynn asked, Is everything okay? Rune just asked her, What happened? Like, have you seen Hunt at the gun range or anywhere? The music faded. A door slammed.
Where are you?
Home.
It hit her then, the rush of how stupid this was. Calling him, asking if Rune, of all people, knew what the governor's personal assassin was doing.
Give me 5 minutes.
No, I don't need you here. I'm fine. I just... Her throat burned. I can't find him. What if Hunt was lying in a pile of bones and flesh and blood?
When her silence dragged on, Rune said with quiet intensity,
I'll put Deck and Flynn on it, right?
The enchantments hummed, and the front door unlocked. Bryce went still as the door slowly opened, as Hunt, clad in battle black and wearing that famed helmet, walked in. Every step seemed like it took all of his concentration, and his scent. Blood, not his own.
Bryce.
He's back, she breathed into the phone. I'll call you tomorrow, she said to her brother, and hung up. Hunt paused in the center of the room.
Blood stained his wings, shone on his leather suit, splattered the visor of his helmet.
What? What happened?
She managed to get out. He began walking again, walked straight past her, the scent of all that blood, several different types of blood, staining the air. He didn't say a word.
Hunt!
Any relief that had surged through her now transformed into something sharper. He headed for his room and did not stop. She didn't dare to move. He was a wraith, a demon, a shadow of death. This male, helmeted and in his battle clothes. She didn't know him. Hunt reached his room, not even looking at her as he shut the door behind him. He couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand the look of pure knee-wobbling relief on her face when he'd walked into the apartment. He'd come right back here after he'd finished because he thought she'd be asleep, and he could wash off the blood without having to go back to the Comitium barracks first. But she'd just been standing in the living room, waiting for him. And as he'd stepped into the apartment and she'd seen and smelled the blood, he couldn't stand the horror and pain on her face, either.
You see what this life has done to me? He wanted to ask,
but he had been beyond words. There had been only screaming until now, from the 3 males he'd spent hours ending, all of it done to Micah's specifications. Hunt strode for the bathroom and turned the shower up to scalding. He removed the helmet, the bright light stinging his eyes without the visor's cooling tones. Then he removed his gloves. She had looked so horrified. It was no surprise. She couldn't have really understood what he was, who he was, until now. Why people shied away from him, didn't meet his eyes. Hunt peeled his suit off, his bruised skin already healing. The drug lords he'd ended tonight had gotten in a few blows before he'd subdued them, before he'd pinned them to the ground. Impaled on his blades, and left them there, shrieking in pain for hours. Naked, he stepped into the shower, the white tiles already sweating with steam. The scalding water blasted his skin like acid. He swallowed his scream, his sob, his whimper, and didn't balk from the boiling torrent. Didn't do anything, as he let it burn everything away. Micah had sent him on a mission, had ordered Hunt to kill someone, several people from the different scents on him. Did each one of those lives count toward his hideous debt? It was his job, his path to freedom, what he did for the governor, and yet Bryce had never really considered it, what it did to him, what the consequences were. It wasn't a path to freedom, it was a path to hell. Bryce lingered in the living room,
waiting for him to finish showering. The water kept running. 20 minutes. 30. 40. When the clock crept up on an hour, she found herself knocking on his door. Hunt? No answer. The water continued. She cracked the door, peering into the dim bedroom. The bathroom door stood open, steam wafting out. So much steam that the bedroom had turned muggy. Hunt? She pushed forward, craning her neck to see into the bright bathroom. No sign of him in the shower. A hint of a soaked gray wing rose from behind the shower glass. She moved, not thinking, not caring. She was in the bathroom in a heartbeat, his name on her lips, bracing for the worst, wishing she'd grabbed her phone from the kitchen counter. But there he was, sitting naked on the floor of the shower, his head bowed between his knees. Water pounded into his back, his wings dripping off his hair. His gold-dusted brown skin gleamed an angry red. Bryce took one step into the shower and hissed. The water was scalding, burning hot. Hunt, she said. He didn't so much as blink. She glanced between him and the shower head. His body was healing the burns, healing and then scalding, healing and then scalding. It had to be torturous. She bit down on her yelp as she reached into the shower, the near-boiling water soaking her shirt, her pants, and lowered the temperature. He didn't move, didn't even look at her. He'd done this many times, she realized. Every time Micah had sent him out, and for all the archangels he'd served before that. Syrinx came to investigate, sniffed at the bloody clothes, then sprawled himself on the bath mat, head on his front paws. Hunt made no indication that he knew she stood there. But his breathing deepened, became easier, and she couldn't explain why she did it, but she grabbed a bottle of shampoo and the block of lavender soap from the nook in the tiles, then knelt before him. I'm going to clean you off, she said quietly, if that's all right. A slight but terribly clear nod was his only response, like words were still too hard. So Bryce poured the shampoo into her hands and then laced her fingers into his hair. The thick strands were heavy, and she gently scrubbed, tipping his head back to rinse it. His eyes lifted at last, met hers as his head leaned back into the stream of water. You look how I feel, she whispered, her throat tight. Every day. He blinked, his only sign that he'd heard. She removed her hands from his hair and picked up the bar of soap. He was naked, she realized, having somehow forgotten. Utterly naked. She didn't let herself contemplate it as she began lathering his neck, his powerful shoulders, his muscled arms. I'll leave your bottom half for you to enjoy, she said, her face heating. He was just watching her with that raw openness, more intimate than any touch of his lips on her neck, like he indeed saw everything she was, and had been, and might yet become. She scrubbed down his upper body as best she could. I can't clean your wings with you sitting against the wall. Hunt rose to his feet in a mighty, graceful push. She kept her eyes averted from what exactly this brought into her direct line of vision. The very considerable something that he didn't seem to notice or care about. So she wouldn't care about it either. She stood, water splattering her, and gently turned him. She didn't let herself admire the view from behind either, the muscles and perfection of him. Your ass is perfect, he'd said to her. Likewise, she could now attest. She soaped his wings, now dark gray in the water. He towered over her, enough that she had to rise to her toes to reach the apex of his wings. In silence, she washed him, and Hunt braced his hands against the tiles, his head hanging. He needed rest and the comfort of oblivion. So Bryce rinsed off the soap, making sure each and every feather was clean, and then reached around the angel to turn off the shower. Only the dribbling of water eddying into the drain filled the steamy bathroom. Bryce grabbed a towel, keeping her eyes up as Hunt turned to face her. She slung it around his hips, yanked a second towel off the bar just outside the shower stall, and ran it over his tan skin. Gently patted his wings dry, then rubbed his hair.
Come on, she murmured. Bed.
His face became more alert, but he didn't object when she tugged him from the shower, dripping water from her sodden clothes and hair. Didn't object when she led him into the bedroom, to the chest of drawers where he'd put his things. She pulled out a pair of black undershorts and stooped down, eyes firmly on the ground as she stretched out the waistband.
Step in.
Hunt obeyed, first one foot and then the other. She rose, sliding the shorts up his powerful thighs and releasing the elastic waist with a soft snap. Bryce snatched a white t-shirt from another drawer, frowned at the complicated slats on the back to fit his wings, and set it down again.
Underwear it is, she declared, pulling back the blanket on the bed he so dutifully made each morning.
She patted the mattress.
Get some sleep, Hunt.
Again he obeyed, sliding between the sheets with a soft groan. She shut off the bathroom light, darkening the bedroom, and returned to where he now lay, still staring at her. Daring to stroke his damp hair away from his brow, Bryce's fingers grazed over the hateful tattoo. His eyes closed.
I was so worried about you,
she whispered, stroking his hair again. She couldn't finish the sentence. So she made to step back, to head to her room and change into dry clothes and maybe get some sleep herself. But a warm, strong hand gripped her wrist, halted her. She looked back and found Hunt staring at her again.
What?
A slight tug on her wrist told her everything. Stay. Her chest squeezed to the point of pain.
Okay.
She took a breath.
Okay, sure.
And for some reason, the thought of going all the way to her bedroom, of leaving him for even a moment, seemed too risky. Like he might vanish again if she left to change. So she grabbed the white t-shirt she'd intended to give him, and twisted away, peeling off her own shirt and bra and chucking them into the bathroom. They landed with a slap on the tiles, drowning out the rustle of his soft shirt as she slid it over herself. It hung down to her knees, providing enough coverage that she shucked off her wet sweats and underwear and threw them into the bathroom, too. Syrinx had leaped into the bed, curling at the foot, and Hunt had moved over, giving her ample room.
Okay,
she said again, more to herself.
The sheets were warm and smelled of him, rain-kissed cedar.
She tried not to breathe it in too obviously as she took up a sitting position against the headboard, and she tried not to look too shocked when he laid his head on her thigh, his arm coming across her to rest on the pillow. A child laying his head on his mother's lap. A friend looking for any sort of reassuring contact to remind him that he was a living being. A good person. No matter what they made him do. Bryce tentatively brushed the hair from his brow again. Hunt's eyes closed, but he leaned slightly into the touch, a silent request. So Bryce continued stroking his hair, over and over, until his breathing deepened and steadied, until his powerful body grew limp beside hers.
It smelled like paradise. Like home and eternity, and like exactly where he was meant to be.
Hunt opened his eyes to feminine softness and warmth and gentle breathing. In the dim light, he found himself half sprawled across Bryce's lap, the woman herself passed out against the headboard, head lolling to the side. Her hand still lingered in his hair, the other in the sheets by his arm. The clock read 3:30. It wasn't the time that surprised him,
but the fact that he was clear-headed enough to notice. She'd taken care of him, washed and clothed and soothed him. He couldn't remember the last time anyone had done that. Hunt carefully peeled his face from her lap, realizing that her legs were bare, that she wasn't wearing anything beneath his t-shirt, and his face had been mere inches away. His muscles protested only slightly as he rose upward. Bryce didn't so much as stir. She'd put him in his underwear, for fuck's sake. His cheeks warmed, but he eased from the bed, Syrinx opening an eye to see what the commotion was about. He waved the beastie off and padded to Bryce's side of the mattress. She stirred only slightly as he scooped her into his arms and carried her to her own room. He laid her on her bed, and she grumbled, protesting at the cool sheets, but he swiftly tossed the down comforter over her and left before she could awaken. He was halfway across the living area when her phone, discarded on the kitchen counter, glared with light. Hunt looked at it, unable to help himself. A chain of messages from Rune filled the screen, all from the past few hours.
Is Athalar all right?
Later.
Are you all right?
Then, an hour ago.
I called the front desk of your building, and the doorman reassured me that you're both up there, so I'm assuming you two are fine, but call me in the morning.
And then, from 30 seconds ago, as if it were an afterthought,
I'm glad you called me tonight. I know things are fucked up between us, and I know a lot of that is my fault.
But if you ever need me, I'm here. Any time at all, Bryce. Hunt glanced toward her bedroom hallway. She'd called Rune. That's who she'd been on the phone with when he got back. He rubbed at his chest. He fell back asleep in his own bed, where the scent of her still lingered, like a phantom warming touch. Chapter 55. The golden rays of dawn coaxed Bryce awake. The blankets were warm, and the bed soft, and Syrinx was still snoring. Her room. Her bed. She sat up, jostling Syrinx awake. He yowled in annoyance and slithered deeper under the covers, kicking her in the ribs with his hind legs for good measure. Bryce left him to it, sliding from bed and leaving her room within seconds. Hunt must have moved her at some point. He'd been in no shape to do anything like that, and if he'd somehow been forced to go back out again? She sighed as she glimpsed a gray wing draped over the guest room bed. The golden brown skin of a muscled back, rising and falling, still asleep. Thank the gods. Rubbing her hands over her face, sleep a lost cause, she padded for the kitchen and began to make coffee. She needed a strong cup of it, then a quick run. She let muscle memory take over, and as the coffee maker buzzed and rattled away, she scooped up her phone from the counter. Rune's messages occupied most of her alerts. She read through them twice. He would have dropped everything to come over, put his friends on the task of finding Hunt, would have done it without question. She knew that, had made herself forget it. She knew why, too, had been well aware that her reaction to their argument years ago had been justified, but overblown. He'd tried to apologize, and she had only used it against him. And he must have felt guilty enough that he'd never questioned why she'd cut him out of her life. That he'd never realized that it hadn't just been some slight hurt that had forced her to shut him off from her life. But fear. Absolute terror. He'd wounded her, and it had scared the hell out of her that he held such power. That she had wanted so many things from him, imagined so many things with her brother, adventures and holidays and ordinary moments, and he had the ability to rip it all away. Bryce's thumbs hovered over the keyboard on her phone, as if searching for the right words. Thank you would be good, or even I'll call you later would suffice, since maybe she should actually say those words aloud. But her thumbs remained aloft, the words slipping and tumbling past.
so she let them fall by and turned to the other message she'd received from Juniper.
Madame Kira told me that you never showed up to her class. What the hell, Bryce? I had to beg her to hold that spot for you. She was really mad.
Bryce ground her teeth. She wrote back, "Sorry. Tell her I'm in the middle of working on something for the governor and got called away." Bryce set down the phone and turned to the coffee machine. Her phone buzzed a second later. Juniper had to be on her way to morning practice then.
This woman does not peddle in excuses. I worked hard to get her to like me, Bryce.
June was definitely pissed off if she was calling her Bryce instead of B. Bryce wrote back, "I'm sorry, okay? I told you I was a maybe. You shouldn't have let her think I'd be there." Juniper sniped back,
"Whatever. I gotta go."
Bryce blew out a breath, forcing herself to unclench her fingers from around her phone. She cradled her mug of hot coffee.
"Hey."
She whirled to find Hunt leaning a hip against the marble island. For someone heavily muscled and winged, the angel was stealthy, she had to admit. He'd put on a shirt and pants, but his hair was still sleep must. She rasped, her knees wobbling only slightly.
"How are you feeling?"
"Fine."
The word held no bite, only a quiet resignation and a request not to push. So Bryce fished out another mug, set it in the coffee machine, and hit a few buttons that had it brewing. His gaze brushed over every part of her like a physical touch. She peered down at herself and realized why.
"Sorry I took one of your shirts,"
she said, bunching the white fabric in a hand.
Gods, she wasn't wearing any underwear. Did he know?
His eyes dipped toward her bare legs and went a shade darker. He definitely knew. Hunt pushed off the island, stalking toward her, and Bryce braced herself. For what, she didn't know, but he just strode past. Right to the fridge, where he pulled out eggs and the slab of bacon.
"At the risk of sounding like an alpha hole cliche,"
he said without looking at her as he set the skillet on the stove.
"I like seeing you in my shirt."
"Total alpha hole cliche,"
she said, even as her toes curled on the pale wood floor. Hunt cracked the eggs into a bowl.
"We always seem to end up in the kitchen."
"I don't mind,"
Bryce said, sipping her coffee. "As long as you're cooking." Hunt snorted, then stilled.
"Thanks," he said quietly, "for what you did."
"Don't mention it,"
she said, taking another sip of coffee. Remembering the one she'd brewed for him, she reached for the now full mug. Hunt turned from the stove as she extended the coffee to him, glanced between the outstretched mug and her face. And as his large hand wrapped around the mug, he leaned in, closing the space between them. His mouth brushed over her cheek, brief and light and sweet.
"Thank you,"
he said again, pulling back and returning to the stove, as if he didn't notice that she couldn't move a single muscle, couldn't find a single word to utter. The urge to grab him, to pull his face down to hers and taste every part of him practically blinded her. Her fingers twitched at her sides, nearly able to feel those hard muscles beneath them. He had a long-lost love he was still holding a torch for, and she'd just gone too long without sex. Cathona's tits, it had been weeks since that hookup with the lion shifter in the Raven's bathroom. And with Hunt here, she hadn't dared open up her left nightstand to take care of herself.
"Keep telling yourself all that,"
a small voice said. The muscles in Hunt's back stiffened. His hands paused whatever they were doing.
Shit. He could smell this kind of thing, couldn't he?
Most Vanir males could. The shifts in a person's scent, fear and arousal being the two big ones. He was the Umbra Mortis, off limits in 10 million ways. And the Umbra Mortis didn't date. No, it'd be all or nothing with him. Hunt asked, voice like gravel.
"What are you thinking about?"
He didn't turn from the stove.
"You Like a fucking idiot, I'm thinking about you?
There's a sample sale at one of the designer stores this afternoon, she lied.
Hunt glanced over his shoulder.
Fuck, his eyes were dark.
Is that so?
Was that a purr in his voice?
She couldn't help the step she took back, bumping into the kitchen island.
Yes,
she said, unable to look away. Hunt's eyes darkened further. He said nothing.
She couldn't breathe properly with that stare fixed on her.
That stare that told her he scented everything going on in her body. Her nipples pebbled under that stare. Hunt went preternaturally still. His eyes dipped downward, saw her breasts, the thighs she now clamped together, as if it had stopped the throbbing beginning to torture her between them. His face went positively feral, a mountain cat ready to pounce.
I didn't know clothing sales got you so hot and bothered, Quinlan.
She nearly whimpered, forced herself to keep still. It's the little things in life, Athalar.
Is that what you think about when you open up that left nightstand? Clothing sales?
He faced her fully now. She didn't dare let her gaze drop. Yes, she breathed. All those clothes, all over my body.
She had no idea what the fuck was coming out of her mouth.
How was it possible all the air in the apartment, the city, had been sucked out?
Maybe you should buy some new underwear,
he murmured, nodding to her bare legs.
Seems like you're out.
She couldn't stop it, the image that blazed over her senses, Hunt putting those big hands on her waist and hoisting her onto the counter currently pressing into her spine, shoving her t-shirt over her midriff, his t-shirt actually, and spreading her legs wide, fucking her with his tongue, then his cock, until she was sobbing in pleasure, screaming with it. She didn't care just so long as he was touching her, inside her.
Quinlan.
He seemed to be shaking now, as if only a tether of pure will kept him in place, as if he'd seen the same burning image and was just waiting for her nod.
It'd complicate everything. The investigation, whatever he felt for Shahar, her own life. To fucking hell with all that. They'd figure it out later. Burning smoke filled the air between them. Gross, nose-stinging smoke.
Fuck,
Hunt hissed, whirling to the stove and the eggs he'd left on the burner. As if a witch spell had snapped, Bryce blinked, the dizzying heat vanishing.
Oh, gods. His emotions had to be all over the place after last night, and hers were a mess on a good day, and...
I have to get dressed for work,
she managed to say, and hurried toward her bedroom before he could turn from the burning breakfast.
She'd lost her mind, she told herself in the shower, in the bathroom, on the too quiet walk to work with Syrinx, Hunt trailing overhead, keeping his distance, as if he realized the same thing.
Let someone in, give them the power to hurt you, and they'd do exactly that in the end.
She couldn't do it, endure it. Bryce had resigned herself to that fact by the time she reached the gallery. A glance upward showed Hunt making his descent as Syrinx yipped happily, and the thought of a day in an enclosed space with him, with only Lahaba as a buffer. Thank fucking Erd her phone rang as she opened the gallery door. But it wasn't Rune calling to check in, and it wasn't Juniper with an earful about missing the dance class.
Jessiba?
The sorceress didn't bother with pleasantries.
Get the back door open. Now.
Oh, it's horrible, Bibi,
Lahaba whispered in the dimness of the library.
Just horrible.
Staring up at the massive, dimly lit tank, Bryce felt her arm hair stand on end as she watched their new addition explore its environment. Hunt crossed his arms and peered into the gloom. Any thoughts of getting naked with him had vanished an hour ago. A dark, scaled hand slapped against the thick glass, ivory claws scraping. Bryce swallowed. I want to know where anyone even found a Nock in these waters.
From what she'd heard, they existed only in the icy seas of the north, and mostly in Pangaea.
I preferred the Kelpie,
Lahapa whispered, shrinking behind her little divan, her flame a quivering yellow. As if it had heard them, the Nock paused before the glass and smiled. At more than 8 feet long, the Nock might have very well been the hellish twin to a mare male. But instead of humanoid features, the Nock presented a jutting lower jaw with a too-wide, lipless mouth full of needle-thin teeth. Its overlarge eyes were milky, like some of the fishes of the deep. Its tail was mostly translucent, bony and sharp, and above it, a warped, muscled torso rose. No hair covered its chest or head, and its four-fingered hands ended in dagger-like claws. With the tank spanning the entire length of one side of the library, there would be no escaping its presence, unless the Nock went down to the cluster of dark rocks at the bottom. The creature dragged those claws over the glass again. The inked SPQM gleamed stark white on his greenish-gray wrist. Bryce lifted her phone to her ear. Jessica picked up on the first ring. Yes.
We have a problem with the Korsaki contract.
Jessica's voice was low, as if she didn't want to be overheard.
No,
Bryce scowled at the Nock.
The creep in the aquarium needs to go. I'm in a meeting. Lahaba is scared as hell.
Air was lethal to Nox. If one was exposed for more than a few seconds, its vital organs would begin shutting down, its skin peeling away as if burned.
But Bryce had still gone up the small stairwell to the right of the tank to ensure that the feeding hatch built into the grate atop the water was thoroughly locked.
The hatch itself was a square platform that could be raised and lowered into the water, operated by a panel of controls in the rear of the space atop the tank. And Bryce had triple-checked that the machine was completely turned off. When she'd returned to the library, she'd found Lahaba curled into a ball behind a book, the sprite's flame a sputtering yellow. Lahaba whispered from her couch,
"He's a hateful, horrible creature."
Bryce shushed her. "Can't you gift him to some macho loser in Pangaea?"
"I'm hanging up now."
"But he's..." The line went dead. Bryce slumped into her seat at the table.
"Now she'll just keep him forever," she told the sprite.
"What are you going to feed it?"
Hunt asked, as the Nock again tested the glass wall, feeling with those terrible hands.
"It loves humans,"
Lahaba whispered.
"They drag swimmers under the surface of ponds and lakes and drown them, then slowly feast on their corpses over days and days."
"Beef," Bryce said, her stomach turning as she glanced at the small door to access the stairwell to the top of the tank.
"He'll get a few steaks a day,"
Lahaba cowered.
"Can't we put up a curtain?"
"Jessica will just rip it down," Hunt offered.
"I could pile some books on this table, block your view of him instead."
"He'll still know where I am, though,"
Lahaba pouted at Bryce.